pull some holdo maneuvers.
Hello again, and welcome to another episode of the, I was going to say Animation Fascination, but this is Holdo Maneuver Podcast. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mike. We're two hardworking dads trying to immerse ourselves in Star Wars and fit it into our very busy lives.
This is your first time listening and or watching, and this podcast will share our thoughts on different topics from a galaxy far, far away.
But I do have a question for you both.
Oh boy.
What's that?
If R2 is short for R2-D2, and Chewie is short for Chewbacca, what is Luke short for?
Six Flags Roller Coaster.
I was going to say to get into the Death Star.
A stormtrooper? This is Star Wars, right? Star Wars?
It's true.
It might be.
Just checking.
We both clicked the same one at the same time.
So this week, we're going to be talking about for Episode 66. Now Order 66.
Execute Order 66.
We're going to be talking about Attack of the Clones, which came out, what is it? This is the year 2024.
2002.
So it came out 22 years ago. It made this sound effect famous.
I feel that in my body all the time.
That's what she said.
My knees make that noise when I stand up now. How old I am.
Okay, nice. So with both of you rewatching this, when was the last time you had watched the movie before rewatching it for this episode? Allison and then Mike.
For me, it was right. It was during sort of lockdown, right before Rise of Skywalker sort of came out, and like the first weekend I had Disney Plus, right? I think that it was right around when Rise of Skywalker hit Disney Plus. But I basically, as soon as I had Disney Plus and it was all on there, I sort of watched all of them in order to end it with Rise of Skywalker. So like within the last, pandemic, post-pandemic time is weird. So a year, 5 years, 20, I don't know. It's since the Rise of Skywalker hit Disney Plus, so recent-ish.
Time is a construct.
Yeah, I watched it within the last year or year and a half. Well, 2 years ago when I last watched it. So it was fairly recent. I try to watch all of them at least every 2 years. It seems to be the time frame I hit them all.
I can probably look at Letterboxd to see when the last time was that I watched it before this most recent time. Well, I guess that would also have to be if I logged it too when I. So let's see. Let's see when I. If it will open. Let's see. So the last time before yesterday was December 13th of 2019. And then the last time before that was December 13th of 2015. So I guess I broke my December 13th.
There you go.
So you know what that must have been? I must have been rewatching them, like all of the movies before, like Last Jedi or Rise of Skywalker or like Force Awakens came out, each of those years before, to like try to watch all.
That's what
that seems like that is. So this is going to be weird too, because I'm going to go see Phantom Menace in theaters next weekend on May the 4th.
Oh my gosh, that is next weekend.
Yeah. So it's going to be like this weird thing where I've recently watched part 2 and now going back to watch part 1 again. Although like this past month or so, just like in the theaters, between all of like the Raimi Spider-Man films playing in theaters, Shrek 2 playing in theaters, the 1999 Brendan Fraser.
What year is it?
The Mummy playing in theaters this weekend. Right. Also the 25th anniversary for that one. Yeah, it's like, Oh, yeah. What did you see in theaters this year? Oh, I saw Spider-Man, Spider-Man 2, Shrek 2, The Mummy, Phantom Menace. They're like, what year was that? 2024? But, yeah. Like, I think the last time I saw this in theaters probably was when it came out, because they haven't done a re-release for this. Yeah, they were going to do all of, well, I mean, the outside of, like, you know, like, doing the, like, the mega marathons, because they're doing that that day too, so it'll be in if you're doing that day, you will be able to watch Attack of Clones in theaters on May the 4th, and our friend Kenny, I believe, is doing that, so good luck sitting
good in the luck theater Kenny's for, ass
yeah for 24 hours.
I was watching. Yeah, I'm disappointed that's nowhere near me, because I'm like, I would do that.
I
looked and I watched this last May 4th, 2022. So there you go.
Well, there you go. So it seems like you do like a rewatch every Star Wars. Ralph calls it Star Wars merchandise day, since Orthodox Star Wars Day is May 25th.
Right. It's just it's coincidental in this case.
Pre Disney TD.
Yeah. Yeah. But like when you saw this in theaters back in 2000. What are some of the memories you had from like seeing that, Allison?
I had just, like I mentioned, I think before we started recording, I had just moved to Oregon when it came out. So it was the first Star Wars movie that I saw in Oregon, so that was a big step. I've seen all the other ones. I lived in Texas and Louisiana, so it was one of the two states. It's the first one I went and saw without my parents, or my family, because obviously we didn't all move up here. Right. And I was in a really horrible relationship at the time, and it was very Anakin and Padme-esque. Oh, man. You know, like if he had come home and like, I just killed a village full of Tusken Raiders, I would have been, that tracks. So it hit, you know, like, and we went, of course, together, and I'd moved up here, but realized really quickly, like, bad idea. So my memories were very much sitting in the theater with Star Wars being an escapist thing for me, and it not being super escapist, but hitting a lot more emotionally than any of the other ones had up until that point.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was just, just a second.
I don't remember. The one thing that sticks out is that sound you played for me. Like, I remember that pulsating in my body in the theater because it's how loud and... Yeah, that. Then the whole time, the next time I watched it, because he was being annoying. He couldn't move seats. It wasn't like it was a packed house. He just wanted to be annoying.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't even remember. I actually don't remember. Like, I know that I saw it in a theater, but I don't, like, have a this is, like, one of the ones I don't have, like, a distinctive memory of seeing in a theater. I don't remember if I saw it at the movie theater that we had worked at, or if I saw it at the one at the mall, or if I saw it in Syracuse. Well,
I don't think you were working there yet.
Yeah. Because we were... we were in like 10th grade, I think, when this came out. Yeah, so it was 2002. So
I think this came out the same year as the second or third Harry Potter movie as well.
Yeah, that
and I remember seeing that with you at Movieplex. So we probably saw this there. I don't think the mall theater was open at the time.
Yeah, I remember I had the poster for this, the one where it's like Anakin Padme, like back to back. It looks like he has like a red lightsaber. And it says, "A Jedi shall not know blah, 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 blah."
Yeah.
On there. I think that is kind of interesting. That it's like, because I distinctively remember seeing Phantom Menace in theaters, and then like Mike and I worked at the movie theater when Revenge of the Sith came out. So we watched that one like three or four times before it actually
was out. We didn't have the ability. We had to pay for this one.
Yeah. We
rely on our parents for transportation.
That's true, but yeah, I remember because, like, in my notes for this too, I have, like, the thing that one of the things that I liked the most about this movie is that opening kind of, it's like essentially like the car, like a Star Wars equivalent of like a car chase here at the like the opening of this too, more, like more part of the opening. We'll go back here in a second, but I just remember that being like one of the coolest things I liked about like this movie at that point, and you really see the relationship between Anakin and Obi-Wan there first. Like, I mean, you see a little bit of it earlier, like as like they're in the elevator and whatnot, and like a little bit of them kind of like having like brotherly like bickering back and forth, but like it's here you can kind of like really see during that scene, like where you can tell there's like a history of some of the stuff that they're doing during that scene, where you're like, oh, okay, like it's like, oh, I hate when he does that. So like, you know, like they've done like very similar types of things like this before in the past 10 years since Jake Lloyd has turned into Hayden Christensen in that time. Now in the opening of this too, like we kind of talked about like the sound design a little bit too, between like the seismic charges that we'll get to later in the movie, but even like, you know, like the Naboo starships, like the super metallic Naboo starships,
straight up flex. That's what those are.
Which is like a good kind of like cloaking thing too, especially when you're on Coruscant with all the clouds and stuff, you really can't really differentiate where that is.
Yeah.
And did you guys know that the entire planet is a city?
The entire planet is a city.
That's for our friends over there at Trek Wars. But yeah, except Mike pointed out, like except one, for that mountain.
The little mountain pops. Yeah.
The little mountain peak.
It's the last bit of, I'm old school Star Wars nerd. So in the 90s, when I was getting my first checks from Blockbuster, I would go to like Suncoast Music and Walden Books and buy all of the expanded universe. So I have like the Macquarie art, and he did new pieces for it, but it was like the Planetary Guide, I think is what they called it, and the Coruscant was in there. And they had a bunch of his original OT trilogy illustrations in it, but it also had some newer stuff he had done, and it sort of discussed, you know, because originally it had, it was like Had Abaddon, I believe was the original name during Jedi before it was cut from the script. And then Timothy Zahn gave it the Coruscant. It was the old school Star Wars nerd story. And in that book, it detailed all of it. So that was one of, sort of for me, because, you know, Phantom Menace has some Coruscant, but you don't really get Coruscant like you do in Attack of the Clones. Like, you get to see Coruscant. So that was huge excitement for me whenever it, like, we got more than just sort of, oh, you're on Coruscant. Oh, look, it's a Jedi temple. Oh, look, the Senate. Okay, you're back in your apartment. Like, we get Coruscant in this movie, and to me that was really exciting because it had just sort of existed in the books and, you know, all the expanded universe stuff. And, you know, expanded universe has always been, like, George Lucas can decide at any moment to toss all of that out. But once it's on film, it's real. So it was really cool for me, as a giant old Star Wars nerd, to like get a bunch of the stuff for real on screen that can't be taken back. So,
true. Yeah, I think what was it like the first 30 to like 40 minutes or so of the movie, I think, is on Coruscant. Maybe it's just the first 30 minutes.
No, it's 2.5 hours, so it could have been.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, like, there's that whole, like, so like we start with, you know, like the, like I said, like the Naboo ship landing. Then you get that nice little line from, I think, is this Captain Panaka in this part?
So T-Y-P-H-O. Panaka's cousin, I believe.
Okay. But yeah, like, he's got that line. He's like, I guess there wasn't any danger at all. It's like, you don't say that.
How people die.
Yeah. And then, like, I believe this is where we see Rose burn, too, or that could be later on for the...
Oh, wasn't Keira Knightley in this?
No, it's Rose... It's another would-be future famous actress now taking, like, the Padme kind of, you know...
I thought Keira came back for it. I couldn't remember.
No.
I thought it looked, she looked off. I just assumed she wasn't, like, 10 anymore or whatever she was in the Senate.
I think she was 14, and, or she's supposed to be 14. And, but, yeah, but, like, yeah, that happens, and so, that, and then, like, from there, then that's when it then cuts to, you know, Anakin and Obi-Wan coming up on the elevator, which kind of starts the weirdness of, like, Anakin's infatuation with Padme at that point, too.
The creepy, creepy dialogue.
It's like, I've been thinking about her for, like, the past 10 years or so. It's like...
Yeah, his dialogue is very cringy. A lot of this movie.
And Hayden's doing the best he can to, like, you know, deliver it, like, with what he's got on there. But, like, even when, like, Padme sees him and she's like, Annie? She's like, "My, you've grown." He's like, "So have you grown more beautiful, I mean."
Right. All that was missing was him looking at her and being like, "You float like a feather. And, you know, you're so, so very special, Padme.
You used to like look like an angel.
Your skin makes me cry.
I hate sand.
It's gross."
It's like, it what? It
gets everywhere.
Writes itself.
I mean, if I was him too, I would hate sand. Yeah. I mean, I kind of am, in a way, since I live in Phoenix. That's the closest thing to Tatooine.
Pretty close.
It's true.
So,
at least it's not Tempeh, which is more like Mos Eisley Spaceport. That's true. Hive of scum and villain.
That is true. That is true. Although I am out, like, on the outskirts, so that could be closer to being like Mos Espa, Mos Eisley, too, out here. But yeah, like, what did you guys think about, like, this kind of whole opening sequence between, you know, like the ship blowing up, Rose burn, and then the Obi-Wan Anakin reintro here at the start of the movie too.
I love the sound of that ship as it comes in, like, sort of the, it's got, like, this wobbly, like the sound of, it's like a gunboat sound almost. Is that what they call this, like, the World War II, like, airplanes, which I'm sure is where Lucas was inspired for that sound, like, where he had the sound people grab it, because it has that, but it's very dreamy, the way the ship just sort of kind of comes looping down from, like, the crawl and, like, into Coruscant and through the clouds and the cloud, and it's very, you know, like, everything's golden and it's, like, got this, like, a vanilla sky almost. You almost expect Cameron Diaz to, like, crash a car into the ship and that's the danger, but no. I also like that we got that darkness of the Handmaiden, like, the decoy thing. Because, you know, like, Phantom Menace is, despite the, like, bisection of Maul and the death of Qui-Gon, it's a very bright movie. Whereas from the, you know, so you never really consider that, like, well, I mean, I did because I was older, but for most people, like, you know, there was a kid who cried, like, the first opening night when we went, there was a kid who was like, oh my God, they killed the queen. And the parent was like, shh, be quiet. And I was just like, no, it's a handmaiden. It's clearly a handmaiden because we didn't see her face. And that's almost a recycled costume from the last one. Padme never wears the same thing twice unless it's reshoots. I will, so I liked all of that. I liked that Padme had the space-defying helmet that completely had all of that hair just up in it, and it magically just tumbles out as if that all could fit in that helmet. So Naboo, like, not only do they make cool ships, but they're, you can displace your giant fake sew-in braids, like, in a helmet. So, but I did like it. Yeah, and it's also the most, sort of the end of the whole handmaiden decoy thing, because that didn't get logically concluded in Revenge of the Sith to my satisfaction. So, you know, because, you know, the logical thing is everyone thinks Padme is dead in Revenge of the Sith, but is actually a decoy, and she goes into hiding on Alderaan to raise her child as Leia's handmaiden, and then blows up on Alderaan. But,
Blows up either way. That would then make the whole thing about Padme remembering her mom make more sense, too.
I know, right? I was thinking George Lucas had planned everything out, and
it's like
I thought it was building to that. But it's really dark, and then, you know, we get Anakin being weird and creepy, and it's very cringe. You know, we didn't call it that back in 2022. It's like, what a creep. But also there is that fun, you know, father son, you know, sort of stepdad. It's more of a stepdad energy with Obi-Wan, but cool stepdad, not a gross stepdad. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, almost like a Paul Rudd in the newer Ghostbusters movies. Like.
Yeah, it's got sort of that energy to it, and they're fun together, and that's part of what I think helps. I know a lot of people were sort of not kind to Hayden Christensen, but like I always liked him as Anakin, especially in this movie, and I do. Despite the creepiness, I do feel like he and Padme from the get-go, it's clear some of, to me anyway, that some of her awkwardness in that beginning is that he's not really just that little boy from Tatooine. She is actually seeing him and realizes, oh, he is grown up and he is, you know, he is not unattractive. It probably helps that they were dating in real life at the time. So, but yeah, like, it's a really good start to me for Star Wars. And again, we get a lot of real world Star Wars stuff. We get diners, we've got clubs, we've got car chases. Yeah. Like, this is the most real world stuff we get in Star Wars. And it's pretty cool, I think. So
it's kind of like if George Lucas mixed American Graffiti with Star Wars.
A little bit, yeah.
At least like the start of this between, like, yeah, like you said, like with the somehow 1950s diner in a galaxy far, far away, a long time ago.
Yeah. And then they escape. Everything comes back around sometime. You know, they take a public transit bus basically across the galaxy back to Naboo. So, like, there's all this cool real world stuff that happens.
Oh, yeah. That's kind of like what Mando's kind of taken a few times now, like in some of the stuff, like those shuttles that we've seen him on in the Mandalorian. Yeah. I wonder if it's supposed to be like the same or similar type of a thing there.
Probably similar.
But yeah, like you're saying, we got Obi-Wan in here with white Jesus with the Jedi mullet that's become famous from Obi-Wan in this, because of course Esmonde, who is Ezra in Ahsoka, he is historically accurate Jesus. But Ewan McGregor is white Jesus. So yeah, Star Wars has got plenty of Jesus. And then, of course, Anakin is, you know, like the equivalent of, like, you know, the Immaculate Messiah that actually maybe is the Antichrist.
It's possible. There's an argument to be made.
L. Ron Hubbard, is that who he is?
Yes. I'm gonna go jump on a space couch. But yeah, I enjoy like the stuff with Anakin and Obi-Wan here. Like you've seen it again too between like the Obi-Wan series and then, you know, more recently, like with all the stuff with you and Hayden have been doing for either the Obi-Wan series or just like at Celebration or other stuff that they've filmed together recently. They have like a really good friendship and chemistry with one another, so anytime they're on screen together acting against one another for that. It's always really great. And then I like within the Obi-Wan Kenobi series, there's a flashback that takes place in that that's set seemingly either I think it's supposed to be set like pretty much before this movie starts, is where it seems like it would kind of like wedge in timeline wise. Not wedge in Tilly's, but you know, wedge itself into the timeline. Because that seems about correct for like it's almost like that's what they were doing, and then they left, got on that elevator, and then this movie right. starts.
Yeah, so. It does feel very just before.
Yeah. And then like after this, it feels like this movie is also like the first time you see like a bed, like a real like bed in a Star Wars movie, and it just looks like a normal.
A couple times.
Bed.
Well, because as Hamilton mentioned, they're in like this city. They're in this world that we to relate and things. So.
Yeah, I guess like Coruscant would be like the closest, maybe like equivalent of any kind of Earth proxy, like within Star Wars. Like as far as like similarities esque, just because the whole planet is one city.
It's got almost a New York vibe to it. Like, it feels like a less dystopian version of the cities, like in Blade Runner, to me. Like,
oh, yeah.
It's sort of. I mean, parts of Coruscant, obviously, like where the club is with the Death Sticks and whatnot. That's obviously very seedy. That again, like you've almost got some Golden Age comic book name. Patterns in this one, like George Lucas, like let's really make sure people know this guy is a sleaze bag. How can we? Oh yeah, I know
sleaze bag.
Yeah, right.
We'll come back to that one and rename him later. Oh wait, he didn't.
Right, it's like an art. It's the less.
I think I have that extra.
Yeah, it's like less R2-D2 ended up working. It doesn't always work, George. It's almost like New York City, I think, a little bit, so.
Yeah. And then, so, like, speaking of Lego, yeah, you know, like, you don't want to sell me death sticks. You want to go home and rethink your life. I want to go home and rethink
your life. I want to go home and rethink your life.
Like restaurant is kind of interesting too. It looks almost like an off track betting type of a like or like sports bar kind of thing because you see like pod racing like on a equivalent like a TV in there and then it looks like there's something that's like some kind of equivalent of like I don't know like dog or horse racing.
Right, it's like
whatever that racing was that was in. Was it in Rise of Skywalker or Last Jedi where they have to free those horse creatures?
Last Jedi.
Oh yeah, I don't remember what the like that.
They're and you have that random chase through the casino,
right?
Yeah,
that was a fun sequence.
Yeah,
that's probably what they were watching. See, all comes back.
There you go.
It's all time.
But yeah, like in here too, we got Zam Wessel. Got a cool name. It was a changeling. So what do you guys think of Zam Wessel? Besides the cool name of Zam Wessel.
I think George Lucas doesn't know what to do with bounty hunters. I think he likes the idea of bounty hunters. And then it's like, immediately is like, I gotta just kill him because I'm lost to him.
Right.
No disintegrations.
Straight into the sand, vagina al dente thingy. So I made some notes. Zam comes across as wannabe Boba Fett. And again, your comment about George Lucas not knowing what to do with bounty hunters hits really hard because I wrote in the notes shades of Ara Singh from like Phantom Menace. We get that one shot of her and it's like they tried to make Fetch happen with her. And Sam feels the same, where it's like she never quite landed on the fan map like you kind of thought she should have and could have. And it just, I think some of it is she kind of gets a really lame death. Like it's very soap opera plot point death. Mm-hmm. Like,
oh yeah,
Russian, the bad guy who knows the exact thing, you know, like death, kyber dart death. Mm-hmm. And then like, as she's dying, it's a bounty hunter. He's called Jing, and then she's dead. Just like, and then you see Django fly into the night,
which is a cool shot. But
it's a cool shot, and yeah. It's just the scene. It feels very. There's so much build up for that. Like there's this massive chase. There's this.
Yeah, this 20 plus minute car chase leads to this 30 second interaction.
30 seconds, and like the way they set her up when she like sends those little death snail things into Padme's apartment. Like she seems really super capable. She like jumps in her car. She takes off like. She does a great job of losing him, and she just—it feels too easy and too quick, and it just felt again. It feels like Lucas doesn't know how to write sort of gangster type characters, and it feels like she gets the short shift. Because I remember like she was one of the preview figures that Hasbro made, and I remember thinking it's really cool, and like her little face sort of didn't peel off on that version. So you didn't know she was like a shapeshifter. And it just, she feels like so, and this is sort of my overall, I don't want to call it like disappointment in the way, like, cause I really enjoy Attack of the Clones. It is my favorite of the prequels. It feels like there's a lot of potential in this movie that never is fully realized because so much is crammed into it. And I feel like she suffers from that as well as George Lucas, just not. I mean, let's be honest, George Lucas is a very sort of clean cut, preppy kind of dude. Like, you know, his rebellion in the 50s was driving racing cars up and down Main Street and like, what was it?
Modesto.
Yeah, Modesto. Like, and I've been on, you know, I've been to Modesto and like with my friend and we've driven that. It's not as super exciting. I can't imagine it was much more exciting in the 50s. Yeah, he's a great guy. He's got some great ideas, but he's also very sort of milquetoast. Like, I don't know. That seems almost like he's just a very normal kind of guy despite his imagination. So, like, I don't, you know, we weren't going to get the Untouchables out of him like we did Brian De Palma. He should have brought in Brian De Palma at this point to help him, like, jazz up his crime stuff. So,
yeah.
But yeah, it just always feels like he's got this cool idea, and then it comes time to utilize what he's set in there, and he's like, I don't know what to do. Kill him.
Yeah.
Like, their whole point in the story is they're going to die, so kill him.
It's too bad. Accidentally
get blown into the air and fall into the Sarlacc pit.
Yeah. It's like, it's too bad, like, she doesn't survive too. Because I feel like she could have been a cool character, like, to kind of incorporate into, like, the Clone Wars animated series, too. Because you could have done some cool things with her being, like, a changeling, too, with that. And so, like, that, like, you don't know, like, when you're kind of interacting with Sam Wessel, maybe. Like you think you're talking to Boba Fett or some other bounty hunter or something, but it's actually Sam Wessel.
Yeah, like, we don't even know the full scope of her changeling. I mean, like, obviously she can look human, like, you know, humanoid. You know, I mean, she, like, her natural form seems to be some sort of, like, amphibious-type creature. But, like, what is the extent of her changeling? Like, is it just, I can look more human? Or I could be a frog person? Or can she, you know, make herself look like one of, like, Jango Fett or... Like, we don't know. And, like, as far as I know, we've never revisited her species. So, like, there's a lot. Somebody, Disney, if you're listening right now, there's so much potential in this character and her species. Like, let's see it.
Just if she's going to turn into something that looks like a frog, just not to hang out around Grogu at all. Because then...
Oh, my God. Wow, that could get spicy. Disney After Dark. But yeah, oh my God, I still, I can't talk about that. I'm still traumatized from that. Grogu is not my friend. He's not safe.
We got that scene where Anakin's like, she covered up the cameras because she didn't want me looking at her anymore or something. Right. I was just like, come on.
Come on, Anakin.
I literally remember going, oh my god, she's gross, in the theater out loud, and people turning and shushing me.
So
I was like, you guys might have like Jedi senses, but she has you're being a creep sense. She can tell somebody's watching her. She's like, Anakin, she was getting ready for bed. Why were you watching the camera then?
I know.
Let the woman sleep.
And then like her, like side note, like her hair is like fully done and like everything while she's sleeping there too.
It's a very 50s thing.
Full makeup on. I
feel.
Right.
It's got to be like that makeup that doesn't like rub off when she's sleeping, I guess, then too. Mm-hmm. So she doesn't wake up and then her like face is like.
Well, I mean, you've got handmaidens. So it's like, all right, it's time to go to bed. Come on. Let's braid this up. Come on.
She probably couldn't go to the bathroom because someone was watching her. Like, she was afraid to go in there.
Oh, man.
She's got a bidet hidden in like her hair.
There you go.
and then from here too, like after like the whole thing with Sam Wessel and, you know, finding all of that out, kind of have like the two divergent storylines kind of start at that point too. So like you have Detective Obi-Wan going to figure stuff out, and then you have the Anakin Padme storyline starts here then as well too. So now I know Jocasta in the library there for the Jedi Archives, like she has become like a bigger character like in the expanded universe and whatnot. But like kind of like here she's kind of has like she's like very kind of just like annoyed it seems like by Obi-Wan like even asking her questions or like him saying that something is missing. She's like, no, if it's not there then it's not there. I do my job. Don't be questioning stuff missing and people like stuff like that. Quick side note is that this was the first movie that was like fully shot digitally too, like digital cameras. And some of the effects didn't age as well as like they did even like for Phantom Menace and Revenge of the Sith, like in this one. It seems like there's a lot of like CG environments or characters in this that like it feels wholly like either like Hugh McGregor is the only person that's there like on screen at certain points, or that
someone's like, there with all the dots and whatnot on
them. I don't even know if they did that yet at that point because it was 2002. But like when there's like a physical set or there's like a physical like a prop or like you can tell that it's like there, like with Obi-Wan, like when he's climbing out of like his Jedi Starfighter later on, you can tell like that's like a physically built thing that Ewan McGregor's like climbing out of. And then like even there's like part of like the cliff face, this is like way further than move it like that, there's like part of like a cliff face in there too, like on Geonosis where he's walking around, you can tell that like that's like a real set too. And then like obviously like all the stuff that like in Italy with that's supposed to be Naboo, like that's
was it Italy or Spain?
I think it's Italy.
Either way, I want to go.
Well, yeah, because I'm pretty sure at the same spot where, spoiler alert, where Anakin and Obi-Wan are married, or not.
Anakin and Obi-Wan are.
Yeah, that's a different.
I've read that fan fiction. It's not bad.
Anakin X Obi-Wan, but yeah, where Anakin and Padme get married, I believe that's like it's like that same. You might be, I'm not sure. It's either Spain or Italy, but like,
either
it's
way,
like,
I go.
It's like a same shooting location from Casino Royale, where they're at the end of Casino or near the end of Casino Royale, which, like, I know that's supposed to be Italy and Casino Royale.
Yeah, no, it's, they filmed all of that in the same area from Phantom Menace in Italy with the the palaces, and, you know, because most, the digital thing for me also does, I did notice that rewatching it, because I was being critical so that I would have some notes. Mm-hmm. I do note that this one, everything has that blue hue because they didn't use green screen, they used blue screen.
Oh, yeah.
And Lucas pretty much, I do remember they didn't really build any of the sets sort of all the way out. Most of it was like flooring and like half of the wall and the rest was digital. And there are places where like Obi-Wan's climbing on something that's real, but everything on either side of it is digitally dropped in there. So, I know people are against the ideas of special editions, but I would love if they went back, especially to Attack of the Clones and cleaned up the digital effects on these. So.
Oh, yeah.
And put in some of the scenes he took out that might have helped.
Oh, yeah. There's a bunch of deleted scenes in here that, like, for especially episode 2 and 3, Padme stuff is, like, most of the stuff that gets cut out in 2 and 3, too. And it's a lot of stuff that, like, really flushes out Padme, too, which kind of stinks that, like, that all gets cut out. Because there's, like, stuff with her family in this that, that helps the whole relationship building there with her and Anakin. And, like what we were talking about there, too, with, like, the effects, too. I don't remember if it was, like, in bonus features for this or if it was, like, in, like, the Easter egg. Like, you could find, like, on the DVDs for these, like, you could find bloopers, like, but you had to find them, like, in an Easter egg way. Whereas the one on Revenge of the Sith is just that one of Yoda, like, breakdancing for some reason.
On the DVDs, they did go, and for Phantom Menace too, they went ahead and completed some of the cut scenes. What they didn't, so we got a bunch of stuff with Padme and her family that does, like where her mom is like, you know, well, maybe, you know, he seems like a good guy. Maybe you should give him a chance. He can't be all that creepy. But what they did,
not just like just as like,
yeah, like he's a good boy. Give him a chance. What they did restore, though, is a bunch of the subplots that dealt with the Separatists, because there's a big scene once they're on Geonosis and captured where they bring Padme in front of several of the Separatist senators who are galactic senators, and they kind of, like, one of them apparently she, in the original script, is supposed to have this adversarial relationship with, and this senator kind of taunts her before she's sent to her, and this is where they, you know, like, sentence her to death in the arena. So, like, a lot of, as much as George Lucas wanted all three of these movies to focus, you know, have more politics of the galaxy, a lot of that is what he ends up cutting in all three of these movies.
Yeah,
because
a lot of her stuff in the third one is, like, pretty much proto Rebel Alliance stuff that she helps to set up in that. It's kind of...
Seemed too focused on what he was doing with the technology and all that, which, granted, it did give us the MCU and what they've done. Like, it probably ushered in that era in a way, but he just butchered these to a point where that's why they were so hated when they came out, because it's like, oh, it's just a shiny box with nothing inside.
Which is incorrect, but it just, you know. My overall take is his producer on these was Rick McCallum, and I've seen Rick McCallum in interviews. And Rick McCallum was always like, George knows everything all the time, and he's the best, and he's so smart, and these are going to be amazing because George Lucas is amazing. Mm-hmm. Whereas, the first one, his, editor and producer was like Marsha Lucas, who was like, this movie is too long and the pacing's off. Mm-hmm. We're going to cut this and make it better.
That was his wife.
Yeah, his wife, right. And they're not married anymore. They got divorced around the time that they were writing Temple of Doom. So if you ever wonder why Willie is so unpleasant and such a shrew of a woman, George Lucas and Spielberg were both in the middle of very difficult divorces at the time they were making that. So from very attractive brunette women. So just saying.
Anything goes.
No, I definitely felt like something. Someone wasn't in his ear this time that had more authority to make him rethink something. It was too much like he had was stuck on this one path and he was going to make it happen, no matter what. Because these are like the prequels at the time when they came out. I was in my teens, so of course, moody, whatever. I still liked them, but it was just fun to hate on them. And now I'm like, I look back on them and it's like, oh, these were actually pretty good. Like, not as bad as I thought they were.
Well, I know, at least by the time Revenge of the Sith came around, like, I don't know if it was good that, like, that I was, like, attaching myself so much to Anakin, especially because of some of the problematic stuff with Anakin, but, and then, although, side note to that, I guess, it cycles back around because my son's going to a con this year. He bought himself the Anakin Revenge of the Sith costume. And like, his hair actually looks closer to like what Hayden Christensen's hair looked like in Revenge of the Sith. And he's also thinking about like making his hair look a little bit closer to Hayden Christensen's too. I was like, well, you know who did that too? And you know who's also bald now after doing that? This guy. But yeah, I mean, and then so like in here too, there with Jocasta, we had the Sifo-Dyas mention. We already brought up the I don't like sand. This is also where we meet Jango, as Temuera Morrison and Boba Fett here. Go to Kamino, which has been expanded out a lot now, between like the Clone Wars animated series, more on the Bad Batch too. It's spoiler alert on the Bad Batch, it's been obliterated. So now that planet, I don't know if that's the only spot on the planet where they have those platforms, because that seems very like weird if that's like the only
part that matters to the story, I guess.
Yeah, because I mean a lot of the planets are like just like one environment
just
on the entire
right,
like, you know, how Coruscant's the entire city is the planet. Yeah, the entire planet is a city.
Ice planet Hoth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Desert Tatooine.
Forest moon of Endor. What is it? But we do know that Endor is the planet in Rise of Skywalker that they're on, right? Or is that another moon of Endor?
I think it's supposed to be another moon because Endor is like supposedly a gas giant, so it's just it's like a Jupiter situation.
You know, who else is a gas giant? Jabba the Hutt.
It's true. You should lay off the frogs and beans.
Give me one of those.
Be closer to Pizza the Hut. Pizza or Salad the Hut. Sent out for you. But yeah, so like this entire movie too, like Anakin's talking about having like these dreams about his mom, where he sees or can sense like something's gonna happen to her too. So we'll go back to Obi-Wan and Jango here in a second, but like at the same time, Anakin and Padme decide to go back to Tatooine. When he's there, he runs into Watto again, who's got a little bit of beard going now too.
She's pretty down on his luck, Watto.
Yeah,
despite being kind of a crappy person, crappy being.
Yeah, like apparently, like with him, you know, after he sold Anakin, well, he didn't really sell Anakin, but like after he lost Anakin and then sold Shmi to Lars, which. Is Lars so creepy? Is Lars his first name or last name?
No, his first name's like Cleek or something like
that. Cleek Lars. Yeah, that's right. So Lars. Gonna be like, I was like, wait, was his name Lars? Because since Owen's last name is Lars. Lars, like Lars.
Mario.
Yeah, I'm Mario and he's Luigi Mario. But yeah, like this whole thing with like, they go there to try to find Shmi, so... Anakin meets his step brother.
Is it really his brother? Did Shmi give birth to Owen?
Well, no, but he could still be like his step brother.
Yeah, I always thought like she gave birth to him for some reason.
I don't think so.
And then I watched it again. And I was like, work out that there. Didn't happen. Yeah, exactly. I was like, that never happened.
Yeah, no, it's like his step brother or something.
Yeah. If anything, it's not. Yeah, because it wouldn't even be like half brother. Because
yeah, stepbrother.
Yeah, I can't. It's been too long since I've read all of that, but it's explained in one of the books. Like Clegg was married and his wife died. Yeah. And then he.
So then he fell in love
with Chimie and bought her and freed her. And
did he free her though?
He made her apparently not. In a different
maybe
way.
That's the real reason she was captured by Tusken. She was running off into the night and
like a panther.
And he looked.
Yeah, of course, Chimie. She never had a chance.
I'm curious in how hard Clegg actually looked for her in that month that she'd been gone.
Well, I mean, he didn't seem too capable. So.
I mean, couldn't Owen have been out there looking with Aru?
Exactly.
Like he's and,
like, Anakin's like, I'm going to look for her. She's like, she's dead. Even though I just told you, I can't bear to live without her.
He's like, that's just my stepmom. I don't really care. That's fine.
We've already got Beru here. She's fine. Look at her little pig tails on his side.
I'll take care of her. My step son.
Right.
My step-nephew?
Step-nephew, well, yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, what's interesting was originally, in a cut scene from Return of the Jedi... Owen is Obi-Wan's brother. Because Obi-Wan, does the over-elaboration that... And they cut it. I think this was even before... I don't know if they filmed it. It might even be before they decided to jettison the whole side plot where Luke's sister was off training with the Jedi Knight and would show up just in time to go fight the Emperor and save Vader. But in the script originally, and it's in the novelization, I'm pretty sure, where Obi-Wan says, my brother, Owen, which added another layer to why Owen, you know, like the Owen, Ben Kenobi, you know, that crazy old man in the desert in the first, in A New Hope. So,
I mean, he still could be his brother, because in Obi-Wan series, he said that he had a brother, but he didn't remember, like his family or anything, because he was taken so young. So maybe,
awesome.
Although Owen would seems too young to have been around when Obi-Wan would have been taken. So maybe not then. I don't know.
There was that card series. I'm looking it up now. I don't know what these cards were called. Where in Owen's description, it says he is brother of Obi-Wan Kenobi.
I know it was in a book too, like the novelization to one of the movies, maybe. Too.
Yeah, Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, it was okay. Yeah,
that's the one where Leia remembers her mother putting her in a trunk with a bantha blanket so that they could smuggle her out so that they could escape someplace. And how she had an Ewok doll as a child, so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then all of this to be said, Anakin, you know, just committing some light genocide on the Tusken Raiders here during this part of the movie.
If you walked in on the person you care, like your mother, and you had the ability to do that, and you... Like, I can kind of see where the anger comes from, but...
You know, sand people are pretty creepy. I will say in that one scene in the Mando where they just sort of pop into screen beside him, like, that's a jump scare for me every time. Like, I've rewatched that 3 times, and every time he, like... And just that Tusken Raider just jump scares into scene, I'm like, oh my god. Okay, I get it, Andy. Can I get it? Do it. Just take them all out. They're like a species of Jasons in the desert. So,
although I mean, they did humanize them a little bit in the Book of Boba Fett, like a bantha.
I didn't watch all of that, so.
But yeah, like I'm assuming, you know, like with like most peoples, that there's, you know, like the subsection of like the Tusken Raiders would be like, you know, like the shitty version or like the crappy, you know, tribe of the sand people. But then there's like, you know, like the sand people that like Boba Fett is with in Book of Boba Fett, they're actually like, you know, cool, like kind people and whatnot. But it's like, yeah, the Tuskeners, those are the a-hole sand people. You don't go talk to them. They're the jackasses. We're cool. We're cool.
We're the good ones. We're the good ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the way Lucas sets it up is they're all just evil.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, at least with all the ones that we see in Phantom Menace or Star Wars or Attack of the Clones or really anything outside of that part of the Book of Boba
Fett. They got to wonder, what did the Tusken Raiders do to Lucas that he can't let go of?
Well, I mean, he did live close-ish to Oakland. So he just didn't like the Raiders, I guess.
They might have been in L.A. at the time. They moved around a lot.
That could be true. Yeah, now they're in Vegas. But
you got to find the Tusken Raider who made it to Coruscant and ask him. I'm sure there's some there.
But, yeah, going back from those aggressive negotiations to... I really like this Obi-Wan and, like, Jango Fett fight that's, like, the rain. On Kamino here, too, like, after Obi-Wan's, like, found out, like, you know, he's... found out, like, all pretty much like all this backstory from like Namaste, like not to quote the, you know, Michael Jackson Namaste
Namaste. There's so many missed Michael Jackson things in this movie. Like nobody once said Annie, are you okay?
Yeah, nobody. Annie, are you okay? Namaste. But that's what I always think about when they talk to those two Kaminoans, the like Namaste and Nama, because I think I think Namaste is the one that's still on Bad Batch. I don't remember. Yeah, I know one of them is dead now, and
yeah,
I think like the female Kaminoan, she's still alive, but the male. You know, and he is dead.
Yeah, she was Nala, like
say.
Nala say. Not Simba say.
Not Simba say.
Mufasa say. What if Mufasa say met Darth Vader say?
Be a shorthanded battle.
Would they meet on the sand lot? Or would they go to see the Field of Dreams?
That's a good question. Or would they have a league of their own?
Oh, man, James Earl Jones did a lot of baseball. Didn't he? Why wasn't he in Rookie of the Year? Come on.
It's too old. Ageism in Hollywood, you know.
I mean, that came out around the same time as The Sandlot.
There was that whole year where, that whole series of years where we got all these different, not quite the Bad News Bears, but boy, did they want some of them to be.
Oh yeah, like Big Green.
Mighty Ducks was in there. Yes. Still hockey.
Yeah, 90s had a lot of sports, kids movies, Little Giants.
Yeah.
Whole bunch of Rookie of the Year. Kid in King Arthur's Court is kind of.
It just brings up the point that Boba Fett was probably not really needed in this because. Kind of just like, Lucas kind of learned his lesson with Jake Lloyd, how tormented he got.
Daniel Logan's adjusted pretty okay though. Although he
wasn't a feature, like he wasn't really.
Yeah, he got to do a lot of voicing of Boba Fett on the Clone Wars though too. So like he got to kind of continue on, and then he even did the voice of some of the younger. Clones in the Bad Batch recently too, so like he does a lot of stuff with Temuera Morrison. Like they actually like hang out almost like they're like father and son with stuff too. So that's kind of cool. With Temuera Morrison too, it's like even when like I've seen him like showing up like in like Aquaman, I'm like, oh look, it's Jango Fett. which Great. I don't know if I've ever seen Dee Bradley Baker and Temuera Morrison together and like side by side.
Same person?
Maybe. Used to say, D. Bradley Baker's going to be at Phoenix Fan Fusion. Maybe we'll have to ask him if he's Temuera Morrison.
Yeah.
Like, are you actually Temuera Morrison? Yeah. Or are you actually Jeremy Bullock? Which or maybe, one are you?
Maybe he's whatever Zam Wessel's species was, and he's just a change.
There you go.
Yeah, maybe Zam Wessel is actually Jango Fett, is actually Boba Fett, is actually Din Djarin.
It's all a mystery wrapped in an enigma. Mm.
There you go. Played by Jim Carrey.
Stuck in George Lucas's brain.
That's right. Yeah. But yeah, so then we also, now, speaking, we spoke about Phantom Menace a little bit. Yeah, Jar Jar trimmed way the F down in Attack of the Clones.
Look how much backlash there was from...
Yeah, which I kind of don't like that, like, he's, like, that reactive to people, like, not liking Jar Jar. Like, stick to your shit. Do what you wanted to do with Jar Jar. Because I'm assuming it wasn't just to, like, have him be, like, a main character in the first one, and then, like, have him say two to three things, and basically have him be the patsy for, like, what makes Palpatine, like, leads him to becoming the Emperor, more or less. Like, that it's essentially Jar Jar's fault that Palpatine becomes the Emperor.
It's almost like he did a meta thing with it, before we called it that, of course. Where he was like, everyone says Jar Jar ruins Star Wars, I'll show them. Like, it almost...
He's actually like going to ruin it. He's going to ruin the galaxy.
You couldn't have any of these other movies without Jar Jar.
And, like, Jar Jar doesn't even talk in Revenge of the Sith. He's just kind of, like, there at Padme's funeral. Spoiler alert.
And it's just like, it's not the actor's fault.
Yeah, Ahmed Best is awesome. He was just, like, showed up in Mando, too.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know, Star Wars fans are just too over the top sometimes.
There's a very healthy, and they've always, I mean, like, people are like, it used to be different. Like, I've seen every Star Wars in the movie theater seven times. I mean, like, I saw New Hope before it was called A New Hope. I mean, I was tiny, tiny, but, like, there was definitely some of the Star Wars a-holes were on the playgrounds in the late 70s, early 80s. Like, they're not new. They've always been with us.
Right.
They've just retroactively tried to pretend that they weren't a-holes back then. So,
they just have an internet. The internet. Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's not for the internet.
They just can hide behind the veil of a keyboard.
We didn't have to listen to them if we didn't have the internet. But then again, they wouldn't have to listen to us tell them they're evil. Mm-hmm. So it's karma, like, or something.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... I don't know. Like I said last episode we recorded, everything is Star Wars and nothing is Star Wars. Like,
yeah.
Also, so we have, like, the scene with Dooku trying to, you know, get... Or we wanted to, you know, be like, hey, why don't you come over here? Come over here, do this with me. And he's like, he's actually telling him a lot of stuff that's actually true, too.
Yeah.
Like, and he's like, oh, there's this Sith controlling the Senate. Like, well, yeah, there is. It's like, he's telling me the truth right there. That's a thing that's happening. It feels like there's, like, stuff here that could have been, like, a thing where, like, it's like he said one thing differently, where, like, maybe Obi-Wan does go with him and, like, find out, like, there's this connection between Dooku and Qui-Gon here. Like, later on, people will know that, you know, like, Qui-Gon was Count Dooku's apprentice. Mm-hmm. Cause I remember, like, after Revenge of the Sith, or before Revenge of the Sith came out, there was, like, a series of books came out. There's, like, a bunch of them that were, like, set between Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones, where it's, like, that 10 years with, like, Anakin and Obi-Wan going on these missions, and, but, like, in there's also, like, a book that was, like, Jedi lineage, too, where it was, like, Yoda training, Dooku training Qui-Gon, Qui-Gon training Obi-Wan, Obi-Wan training Anakin, and just, like, how, like, some of that stuff got passed down from one to the other. And then, of course, now we've had, like, Tales of the Jedi, too, so you've gotten a lot more backstory there on Dooku with that, too, and R.I.P. Yaddle. not, and now we know why Yaddle is not in this movie, because of Tales of the Empire. She got
Jedi.
Tales of the Empire comes out next week. Tales of the Jedi. But yeah, I think she got crushed in that same room that Dooku goes and meets Palpatine at the end of this movie.
With the gears.
Yeah, with the gears. The big gears.
Pretty sure he's meeting Palpatine when she gets crushed.
Right.
Yeah, that's their secret, like, little secret
crushing room
place to
crush up with one another.
Yeah. But yeah, like, as the other thing here too is like when like Padme and Anakin go to save Obi-Wan, and he's like, "Oh, good job," because they're all evolving.
Right.
And this is one of the scenes here too, like when they're like in that whole like foundry kind of factory area too. This is like one of the things from behind the scenes where like Lucas is kind of directing Natalie Portman here and like telling her like what's going on there. And she like can't keep like a straight face. She's like, you're like messing with me, right? Like it's just like this blue room and like some of these blue blocks are going up and down. And she's like acting like she's like running up and underneath some of the stuff. And she's like, what? Like, what are you like messing around with me? But the thing that I always think is weird here too, is like, as like her and Anakin are like going out, like into the middle of like that, like the execution area. And then she confesses her love to him at that point. You're like made to assume like at that point she's doing it because she thinks they're about to die. Like she even makes does it that way to him, like as if. But then she obviously already had a plan, because when they get out there, she like had the key under like her tongue or something.
Yeah, she was
something
she
to
was
pick the lock.
So like, what the hell is that? Like, did she think that she was going to die, or did she not think she was going to die? And if she didn't think she was going to die, why is she acting like that?
Maybe she thought that she could get herself out, but maybe not Anakin. And it was just like, well, before the end of this, let me tell this guy, like, he's not completely awful. I mean, Padme takes care of Padme, like, sorry, Anakin,
she seems to be doing fine.
Gotta go, yeah. Right?
She seems to have discomfort. There's so many puns in, like, this tail end of the movie, too, between O and mostly 3PO.
Oh my god, poor 3PO.
3PO's, like, full of puns at this end of at the end of the movie, right? Beside himself, quite literally. Even says that himself. He thinks that I kind of like I don't know how much some people like this, but like with the, you know, like the droid, not BD-1, forgot the series droid, but like, you know, like the battle droid's head on the 3PO body, or the 3PO head on the battle droid
Roger,
body.
Roger.
And it's just like when he's like, "Die, gentle scum."
What did I say?
What did I say? And then I like after like R2 also has booster rockets in this movie, apparently. And
he
also
had him in Phantom Menace.
And they cut them, so he ends up not.
But then also, does he forget that he has those? Because like when Anakin and Padme get to Naboo earlier in the movie, it's really funny that it's in the background. You can just see like R2 slowly going up the steps and like him leaning really far forward and putting his front leg on the thing and then pushing himself forward. And then that climbs up and then does it again.
It's like the speed walking, the Jedi walking. It just only happened once. Never again. Well,
he uses them for like 3 seconds in Revenge of the Sith at the beginning of
this.
It too.
Well, this hadn't come
That's
out
a
yet.
Pretty we don't cool know that yet.
Yeah, but I think it's like oh, I guess they must get deactivated by the time Episode 4 comes around.
Yeah, I would assume at some point, Bail Organa was like, "Oh, maybe we don't want rockets on this little droid here."
Even though it would be very helpful to him to get around and get to places.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and then, like, with here, too, I think this is, like, the first time we see, like, so many Jedi, like, on screen at once, too. Mm-hmm. And so many lightsabers out, like, in that Geonosis, like, battle arena there. And have, like, Yoda swooping in with the clone troopers to save the day. And then you have Mace Windu there versus Jango. And you just see, like, how crappy the freaking Mandalorian jetpacks are. Between earlier, the jetpack gets effed on Kamino. Mm-hmm. He's got a new jetpack now. That one gets effed, and then he can't fly away. We know later on, Boba Fett's jetpack gets messed up by Luke. So, like, Din Djarin's having pretty good luck with his so far.
It's more Lucas just doesn't know what to do with these characters.
Yeah.
Like,
it's gotta make it not work so that certain other thing can happen. Mace Windu is really ahead of the game there with Jango. And then Jango's also beside himself at that point too.
Which begs the question, and I've asked it when we watch Mandalorian, is Boba Fett really a Mandalorian? Or does he just put his dad's stuff on?
That is my understanding, is that Boba Fett's not a real Mandalorian, that he, because allegedly Jango is not a true, he was adopted into the Mandalorians. And I think some of this is just because they had to backtrack because of changes made to the Mandalorians during the Clone Wars when they, because they actually established Mandalore.
Oh yeah, because they're not like really even established until after this movie.
Yeah, so I think my memory is, and this is one of the times where I was kind of like, I think I need to just stop being so obsessed with Star Wars continuity, because it was obvious everything in the expanded universe that we had known about Mandalore, suddenly none of it was true anymore. It was all out because Lucas told me to do something with it in the Clone Wars cartoon, and then suddenly Jango Fett's not a real Mandalorian. But he was adopted by them and went through like the process. So Boba Fett's not actually a Mandalorian, but he wears his armor culled together from like his dad's stuff, even though it's completely different colors, and
gotta paint it.
Yeah, well, I mean, hopefully he dumped the head out quickly enough and didn't just let it. But, it's a lot. It's a lot to make it all work.
Yeah, I think Corridor Crew, that channel that does, like, a lot of, like, CG, or, you know, like, they do special effects kind of stuff on there. They did an R-rated version of Attack of the Clones where, like, Boba Fett picks up the helmet and Jango's head falls out of it. So if you want to see that, just look it up on Corridor Crew. They did like an R-rated version of like Spider-Man 2, like where he's like holding the train. But just imagine that, like if his like arms didn't hold out.
But, I would have shot up for.
So, and then the next thing we get to, like, that I think is kind of interesting here too, is like we kind of see like the start of Anakin being like a good tactical leader, as far as like what he'll be good at Clone Wars and being like a general within that, with, you know, like giving orders as far as like taking out like strategic.
But he's not a master.
Yeah. But he is a debater.
Obviously, we saw how he played out.
The cameras got turned off.
Yeah, shirtless Anakin with the bantha blanket, I guess it is, up to his chest, and he's thrashing about. Mother.
Yeah. So the other thing I thought was like interesting here too is like I really liked like a lot of the use of like zooms like during like some like the battle scenes, and like how like some of the footage here too, like there's like that kind of like those straight on shots of like the troopers kind of like marching into like the dust, it's like all drawn up and stuff.
It's like
feels very like war film-esque. It's like it almost seems like something you'd see like within like a like like how Spielberg would maybe like have shot like parts of like Saving Private Ryan or something like that. And like none of the clone trooper cost or like in this are like actually any physical costumes for any of that either too. I don't think there's physical clone trooper costumes until like recently in The Mandalorian. Like there wasn't ever actually any, I mean, unless you were like within the 501st, but like four, I think even the ones in Mando were 501st members, like suits that they had made themselves, and Lucasfilm just like hired them for Mando so that they'd have like the clone trooper suits for that, which I thought was kind of interesting. But then like you have like as Padme falls out of the ship there too, and like Anakin and Obi-Wan are kind of like bickering back and forth about going back for her. When they go to that shot of Yoda, you can kind of, it almost seems like he can like sense, like he's like, oh, yeah. These two are fighting about Anakin's trying to go back for his girlfriend there, but Obi-Wan's like, no, but I can sense what's going on. I don't know what's going on with him right now, but something's going on over there. I just noticed some of these like lingering shots on like Yoda this time around, and this like where like you can tell he can sense something is like off or something is going on, but he's not like quite entirely sure what it all is.
He's like, I did that once. Don't you do that?
Right.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, I bet. Yeah. It's like, eventually you're gonna meet or know about Satine, but not yet. Not yet.
Right.
But yeah, it was like describe. If you, I put a note like describe the prequels in one quote. No, Anakin, no.
right.
I mean, I know there's that other one. It's like calm down, Anakin. I mean, same but different. But yeah, I like this kind of whole ending, like series of events here too, between like the battle stuff there with like all the Jedi and the clone troopers. Because it, like, I mean, we will get the Clone Wars, but this you can feel like the ease of this into the Clone Wars from just all of like the Jedi with the clone troopers in this already. But it already feels
Yoda
like
very, proclaimed it's the start of the Clone Wars.
Begun the Clone War has. but yeah, like. You have Anakin fighting Dooku with the two sabers at one point here, and then there goes Anakin's forearm, so there's his robot arm now. You got Yoda versus Dooku, which is a CG old guy versus another CG old guy.
Yeah, I so dislike that battle. So dislike it.
I love it, actually. Like, and people, like, you know, like, my memory of that in the theaters is when he comes in and, like, opens his little cloak and pulls out the saber, everyone just went crazy. And I remember, I remember that as well. Yeah, I wrote it down. Like it was like Sonic the Hedgehog meets, like, it just, I thought it was, I mean, there's so much of the end, you know, like, the whole conveyor belt scene looks like a video game. And it even is like, okay, Padme, back, side, you know, like, leap. All right, you're good.
Down, left, right, A, B, A.
You got to start all over again. Damn it. But I also, I wrote it down in my notes, Crouching Muppet Hidden Jedi, because that's literally like,
nice.
It was within a year or two of Crouching Dragon Hidden, Crouching, whatever the movie
is. Oh, yeah, Crouching Tiger Hidden Dragon.
Yeah, that, Crouching Tiger Hidden, so that was what I, because that's what I thought at the time, because it was very much like, Yoda's always, before that, Yoda had always, you know, like, oh, like, I'm going to talk like the sage old person, and I'm going to play pranks on Luke on Dagobah, and I'm always so wise, and then he just opens up a can of whoop-out. I mean, that's what we said back in 20. Anyone who's like, a can of whoop-out, that's what we said back in the day. Don't at me.
Back in the day.
I'm in the moment of 2002. Like, if you open a can of whoop-ass on Count Dooku, it doesn't look good in retrospect today. When I just watched it this last few days, like, it does not look that great. It looks like a video game, but at the time it was special.
Yes, I agree. At the time, I remember geeking out that Yoda used his lightsaber actually. But now I'm just like,
now
the Anakin Dooku part was like so much more satisfying. Than the Yoda Dooku part.
one of the things I noticed in the Anakin Obi-Wan, or not Obi-Wan, Anakin Dooku fight there too, is that it seems it's trying to mirror a little bit of like the Return of the Jedi Vader Luke fight there, like with the like the use of shadow and like around like all like the industrial kind of stuff there, where it's like Anakin's taking in this stuff right now. Like, all right, when I fight my son in like 30 plus years from now, I'm going to do some of the same stuff that Dooku's doing right now to my son.
Right.
Yeah. Because it's like poetry, it rhymes. But, yeah, I mean, I enjoyed all the stuff here, too, with, like, Dooku. And, you know, like, I do remember, like, I liked, like, how Yoda, like, takes, like, in, like, the Force Lightning Blast and just kind of, like, it just kind of takes it in and, like, it balls up. And then, like, Dooku gets away with his solar sail there.
Which was really, I mean, that hasn't aged well either, but, like, in 2002, like, that was an amazing effect. I remember feeling in awe when it, like, opens and it's all gold and shimmer. It's back when I was still going to rave, so it could have just been residue. But I was whoa, that's really awesome.
What's funny is that I just recently watched For All Mankind, and there's, I don't remember if it's season 3 or season 4 of that, but there's, like, the NASA uses, like, a solar cell at one point, like, on their space shuttle, and that's all I could think of was Count Dooku's solar cell from...
It's coming around again. Yeah, just like they're trying to use sails on ships now again.
Okay. Yeah. And I think it might have been, like, around...
kites, not sails, kites.
Okay. Like, I think it was supposed to be, like, around 2002 within the timeline of the show, too, so...
Mm.
And Star Wars does exist within that timeline, too, so... But I don't know if the prequels exist in that one, because they don't really... They never talked about those, but they did talk about, like,
Star Wars. Well, just, like, space whales exist in Star Wars and Star Trek.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, yeah.
Purgles for the win. But, yeah, and then... So, we see... I kind of talked about already, but, like, Sidious... meeting with Dooku there. Sidious is controlling the Senate. Because the Clone War has. Oh, and then I put that I had kind of wished that... So, like, they play the Imperial March, like, here. Like, when they have, like, that full shot of all the clone troopers. And... It's just, like, straight up just, like, the... It's like, yeah, like...
Yeah.
But I was kind of hoping that, because, like, I know, like, how John Williams has kind of, like, played with some of, like, his pre-existing themes before, like, when he's used them again, where they take place earlier timeline-wise than where he originally wrote them for. I thought it would have been cool, because it's done, they kind of did it in Solo, where it's, like, the Imperial March is, like, changed slightly, propaganda. So it's like more propaganda music in that.
Yeah,
that I had kind of wished that it was like less like of the moody Imperial March in this, but like I don't know, more maybe where it sounds closer to like almost like the throne room from the first Star Wars movie, or like maybe like even closer like the Augie's Great Municipal March from Phantom Menace, but like to like the beats of Imperial March.
It was too perky. Like, I think it doesn't help, though, that you've got Jimmy Schmitz in that moment, like, overacting as Bail Organa. I mean, overall, like, he's been great as Bail Organa, but that one moment, like, there's just this... He's three seconds from putting his fist and, like, biting into his fist like a 50s housewife who's, like, just found out her husband is leaving her for the milkman or something. Like, it's just... He's, like, 3 seconds from going that over the top. And that, I remember in the theater, like, good Lord, Jimmy. I know that half of your scenes are on the cutting room floor, but could you tone it down a bit? Like, just a bit. Like, that's... And, of course, Lucas leaves it in there because, you know, it's bigger, faster, more intense, or, you know, like, direction. He's like, that's perfect. Great job, Jimmy.
Yeah.
So.
And then, it cuts from there to the wedding on Naboo, and then... The
awkward, my strong hand.
Yeah, like the thin, the pre Revenge of the Sith robot hand. But yeah, then you have the general name's Piece de Resistance from Attack of the Clones with the Across the Stars theme that then plays here at the end for this one, which is this film's equivalent of Duel of Fates, which Duel of Fates also in this movie too, when Anakin goes to kill all those Tusken Raiders because it's the duel of his fates, whether if he's going to choose to not commit genocide or to commit genocide, and he commits genocide, so got Shadow.
He was committing genocide.
He got Shadow of Anakin on the hut there, looking like Darth Vader, Tatooine. Yeah. Completing the Jake Lloyd Shadow from the Phantom Menace teaser posters. So did you guys have any other notes or anything we didn't touch on at all?
Let's see. They're almost minor, but Dooku, I really wish we had gotten Dooku earlier in the movie. Because Christopher Lee is amazing, and he's a great character. The beginning of Revenge of the Sith would have hit so much harder if he had gotten a little bit more time in this one. That opening with him doesn't, that hits pretty hard, but I think it could have gone so much bigger if we had gotten more Dooku in this and had him built up because he tries to play a very, but I'm not the villain here when he first runs into Obi-Wan. If we had just gotten a hologram or something of him before to set him up more, rather than him just being, oh, Dooku is doing all this stuff off screen that we're not going to get to until later in the movie.
Yeah, that's true. Especially because, there's a lot of talk about him before we actually get to him.
Mm-hmm.
How about you, Mike? Agreed. Did you have anything else?
Let's see. Yoda mentioning how the arrogance is growing or something like that. There's something mentioned about arrogance. And I'm sitting there thinking, you're the most arrogant one. Of course. You're the leader and you're complaining about arrogance. You're fairly arrogant, Yoda. And then the weakening of the Force line from Mace Windu.
If there's anybody that's arrogant, it's freaking Mace Windu.
Oh, very true. And Yoda was saying that to Mace Windu, so I was also,
come on. Although I liked watching this again too after having watched Tales of the Jedi last year too, because of the whole thing in that with Dooku and Mace, especially because of the line in this where Dooku's calls Mace Windu old friend. So I was like, hey, yeah, you guys are old friends.
Yeah.
I remember that. But then he sold you out so that he could get the credit for something, and then you're like, oh, well, I'm gonna not be a Jedi anymore. That's all I have for Attack of Clones. If you guys don't have anything else,
the last thing I have is that double meaning of the line "You'll always be the little boy on Tatooine," because it's like Anakin really never escapes that until he becomes Darth Vader, and even then, he's kind of he can do all the growing and all that he wants, but he's still stuck on Tatooine.
Yeah.
Until he turns on the Emperor.
And they both fall. No, wait. No, that's right. And then he gets burned on the funeral pyre in his suit. Yeah.
Then he watches Ahsoka on that planet. And then he watches
Luke. Watches Padme on the cameras again. so creepy, this movie.
So crazy.
Anyways, we're
on that note.
I don't want to segue from that to asking you where people can find you online. That's a weird segue.
Really weird segue.
Where can people watch you on camera online?
Ironically, I am on.
Besides right here.
Besides here, I am on the YouTubes. Retro Toy Princess, where I do a variety of nerdy things, a lot of vintage coloring book stuff, and then being that May is upon us soonish, I'll be doing a really sort of big deep dive for May onto Power of the Force 2 and their Princess Leia offerings, including the infamous monkey face Leia sculpt. So that's all coming up in May.
Monkey face Leia.
Yeah. Infamous figure.
Moby is trash.
So yeah, that's where you can find me. And then, you know, on Instagram under Retro Toy Princess. So.
And then for us, you can find Holdem Maneuver at holdemaneuver.com, or if you can't spell maneuver, you can also go to holdapod.com.
I can't. And then,
well, there you go. That's why we got Holdapod as well. But yeah, that's, you can basically look up Holdapod. You'll find us on any social media medium, whether that is Twitter or Blue Sky or Instagram or Facebook. And then we'll be at Phoenix Fan Fusion within about a month too. Mike will, this way. We'll be joining me there. So that'll be fun. Some other guests there too from other podcasts that we do together as well. But then, yeah. So as always, we are grateful to George Lucas for creating the Star Wars universe.
Oh my, thank the maker.